Hi, I'm Warren Giroux, Senior Investment Consultant with Sightline Wealth Management. We are bringing you a series of conversations with a select group of alternative investment managers Sightline works closely with. These managers specialize in private debt, private mortgages, long and short equity strategies, among others. As part of the discussion, we will touch upon governance, transparency, portfolio positioning, current strategy trends, and future opportunities in the asset class. Good morning. I'm Warren Giroux from Sightline Wealth Management, and I'm here today with Wayne Egetz, who is the president, CEO, and founding partner of Wagar Capital. Wagar is a sub-advisor to the Nine Point Canadian Senior Debt Fund. Good morning, Wayne, and thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
There's been a lot going on in the space since we spoke about a year ago, and we thought it would be timely to have an update of your fund and also your views of the private debt sector itself. So if you wouldn't mind starting off, if we can have an overview of your fund and what you've been doing and how you've been managing through this whole COVID crisis, that would be very helpful.
Sure, certainly. And thanks again for arranging this. We've gone through COVID thus far remarkably well. Entering COVID in March 2020, over 95% of our clients were essential service businesses. So, and the two that were not essential services have really done particularly well. They've just remorphed. And as a result, our portfolio throughout the pandemic has been fairly easy to manage. We haven't had any significant problems or issues. And in fact, most of our clients have done better throughout COVID than they did pre-COVID just because of the essential service aspect. We do have one loan, which we've mentioned before, small loan representing under 2% of our fund, which has run into some financial difficulties. I really believe we probably will liquidate that loan in the next number of months. We do not foresee any loss taken on that. It's well collateralized and provided for. So really, with the exception of that one, which is causing us not really any problems, but I think it's, you got to be full disclosure in terms of what the warts are. That's the only wart we have in our fund right now. And really, the rest of the companies are performing well. In fact, over the last 3 to 4 months, we've approved fairly significant increases for a number of our borrowers because of their success through COVID. So that's kind of a snapshot of the portfolio. I'm happy to ask away.
So what would be the total AUM you have under management right now?
AUM as of the end of April was about $335 million.
Okay, and how many loans would comprise that 335?
That represents 17 borrowers.
Okay, 17 borrowers. Do you have multiple loans or multiple loans with borrowers, or is it all when you enter a loan agreement with a borrower, it's a single loan, or is it multiple layers?
Yeah, when we enter it's a single facilities. Definitely, there may be an operating line, there may be a term loan, but it's a single facility to a single borrower.
So what would your average loan size be?
Our average loan size would be about $20-21 million today. And that goes really from a low of, we have a $2.5 million borrower, and then it jumps up to a five. And then our highest borrower is approximately $30
million. Okay. So what would be the average duration, or how do you look at duration? Because if you have a line or a rolling line of credit, that would not have a real termination date. How do you look at that?
Well, all of our facilities are committed facilities. So what that means is we offer financing to our borrowers at a specific term. They can take a 1 year, 2 year, 3 year term. And then at the end of that term, that facility expires. So at that expiration, you know, their options are hopefully they found to refinance through a Canadian bank, cheap source financing, or they renew with us. But as a result, our average term is 14 months as of now in the portfolio.
Okay. And of that, of the number of loans you have you had any reoccurring loans or people who have said, okay, our term is up, but we'd like to extend the term? Or
oh, yes. Yes, definitely. I would say, I'm going to guess a little bit here. I would say probably 55% of our borrowers tend to renew their facility. And our fund really is just a little over 3 years old, 3.5 years old. And, you know, you do get borrowers and they come to us and they're spending a lot more with us than they are with the Canadian banks. And they're hoping to go back to a bank. So generally what happens is they tend to be a little over optimistic in terms of when they thought they would be able to go to back to a Canadian bank. And also in some cases, COVID has affected them negatively and positively because their sales are growing exponentially and they're borrowing more. But as a result, their debt to equity ratio is going up as well. And the banks don't like high debt to equity. So sometimes these borrowers have underestimated the time they needed our type of borrowing. And then they have to renew for another year, let's say, in order to get back to where the bank ratios would work for them. And we won't do shorter than a year. So even though some of the borrowers may only need an additional 3 or 4 months, we just won't do it. So we then really, I don't want to use the word force, but I guess essentially we do force them to take at least a 1 year term, because that helps us in terms of our forecasting of money in, money out. And the last thing we want is to renew a loan for 3 months and then have this money coming back into the fund, which would create a larger cash drag than we forecasted.
Okay. So I guess one of the other questions that comes up quite often is the collateral. Mm-hmm. Now, I think we've spoken many times before, and you indicated again that you over-collateralized the loan, but I think you're one of the private debt funds that actually does evaluation of that collateral sort of more currently, and some of it's pretty close to mark-to-market. How often do you revalue your collateral and look at the valuation of each loan?
That's a really great question. So starting in March of 2020, we went to monthly mark-to-markets by an independent third party. And so, and that was a plan. Actually, COVID, frankly, had nothing to do with it. But that was a plan that ourselves and Nine Point had, as that's the way the industry was going. So really, since March 2020, we have independent third-party valuations on a mark-to-market basis every month.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. That seems to be... I don't actually know that many other private debt companies that are doing month to month, other than if they have warrants or equity kickers or something like that, we're going through that process every month. Sort of a question regarding your staffing. How many people do you have on staff now? Because I last week we spoke, you were looking to hire some additional people, I thought.
Yeah, we currently have 19 on staff, and we have an addition starting, a very senior addition in portfolio starting in the middle of May again. And the bulk of that staff up has been back room and operations. Mm-hmm. My philosophy has always been you staff up in anticipation of growth versus the other way around. So we honestly tend to be always a bit overstaffed. But, you know, if we get one of those spurts where we do a number of loans in a short period of time, we just don't want to be caught short. So that's always been the plan, and that's the one we do.
So one of the things you mentioned earlier was the cash drag. It's important not to minimize the cash drag. How much do you typically carry in cash on the books?
Yeah, well, you know what? Our target is about 10%, and that's our target for this year. And to be, you know, again, full disclosure, we had an excessively high cash drag in February and March of 2021, and that was primarily because we had anticipated some fundings that did not happen and were delayed. So we were probably as high as 30%. In some of those months. And if you look at our January numbers were great. If you look at our February and March numbers, they were lower, and they were lower primarily because of that excess cash drag. And for the month of April, you'll see that our cash drag is back down where it should be, in that 10%. And should we be successful, by the way, and I think we've talked about this before, in getting a leverage line, which we would really very much like to get a leverage line, for no more than 50 million, we'd be able to reduce our cash drag much lower than 10%, which would enhance the return on the fund. But we're also cognizant of the fact that a lot of investors don't like leverage lines. And we will and have reached out to our investors to ensure that should we go a leverage line route, they agree with it. We wouldn't do it if they don't agree with it. But yeah. I think we don't want a massive line. We just want to make sure that, you know, if we can fund a loan on the 5th of the month, we're able to fund it on the 5th of the month because we only settle with 9 point once a month. So, you know, if we settle on the 15th of the month with 9 point, and we have a loan we want to do earlier, we can't. And the other side of it is if we settle with 9 point in the middle of the month and the loan doesn't fund till the end of the month, that creates too much cash drag. So that's a part of our plan for 2021 is to try to get a leverage line in place for the fund.
Okay. I meant to ask this question when you were talking about minimum term on a loan of a year. If you have, or do you allow a repayment of a loan with penalties, or is it just plain you do not want a repayment regardless?
We certainly will allow a prepayment, and we have had a number of those. And if they do prepay us early, they have to pay the interest to the full end of the term. So, you know, if they pay us out month 7, they still owe us 5 additional months of interest.
Okay. I guess the next question is, when we spoke a while ago, you were talking about some sort of sourcing arrangements. I think you had one with Morgan Stanley and there was another company, M&G, I think. I was just wondering if you could explain to our audience a little bit in detail about how that sourcing arrangement works and why you decided to engage in such an arrangement.
Yeah. So why we wanted to engage is, you know, we're definitely, as I said earlier, we're very conservative. We don't really want more than 10% ever invested in a single borrower. So that limits us to larger transactions. And really, quite frankly, today, if there is an ABL private debt transaction done in Canada over 50 million, that's the domain of Third Eye Capital. And so there's only one player in the market that is in that market. And so we think and believe there's a great opportunity for Wagar to do larger loans. But with that conservative view that we have to minimize exposures, what the sourcing arrangement allows us to do is if we see, for example, a $100 million loan and we might want to hold 25 or 30, our sourcing partners will take the balance of that loan. So we'll hold 25, say M&G will hold 75. And the beauty of the structure for us is that normally in these type of transactions, the person that holds the lion's share leads and runs the transaction. But under our arrangement, we no difference. We manage, hold, we're the collateral agent, we're the administrator, it's our people monitoring, it's our people margining, and our people doing the overview. So that's the beauty of this kind of type of sourcing arrangement. And I do think that sorry, there's a dog barking across. I apologize. I do think that what this does is it allows us to go to do larger, well-structured, collateralized transactions, no different than what we're doing today, but it gives us an opportunity to play in that larger market.
So when you were going through this arrangement, I have to believe that these two entities must have done some serious, serious due diligence on your credit process, your loan process, your credit committee, and how you actually view potential borrowers, your due diligence process.
They very much did. You know, they did a significant deep dive, hired independent firms to do audits of our policy and procedures, you know, our credits. So they looked at all our loan agreements, you know, any historical write-offs, reporting, systems, staffing, qualifications. And yes, they did. They both did. And, you know, the other thing I should mention is last year in 2020, Also, BDO did an operational review of same protocols, same system. So last year, we had three extensive diligences done on us, and all good. We're happy, and you're right. We're an open book, so we'd rather have these people take a look at us. So they all came out very well.
Yeah, can you just refresh my memory? What was your return last year, going through the very difficult period that we went through?
Well, it really depends on which level you're in, because we really have three different investor series, right? So they ranged from slightly over 8%, slightly over 9%.
Okay, all right, that's good. I guess now if we can turn to the sector itself, the private debt sector, there's been a little bit of press recently about the private debt sector, and I know that some clients out there who have been investing in the private debt sector may be a little nervous. Is there anything you would like to sort of thoughts you might have regarding the private debt sector and the opportunity going forward and the stability of it going forward? Do you have any views?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the most recent one we're all aware of, it puts a black eye on the whole private debt industry in Canada. I mean, and I think what you have to look at is you have to probably look to some degree at the protocols of our fund, and actually, for that matter, any other 9-point senior debt fund. They're totally. The discipline levels are much, much higher, because, 9-point arranges and its partners arrange the investments, and they qualify the investors. And then we really just manage money and put the money out. And in this particular instance, the one we're aware of, that was not the case. They sourced the money and they lent the money. So there's no oversight. And clearly, 9-point has a high degree of oversight with us on all our processes. We have weekly meetings with 9-point. Every single transaction that we do, we give them copies of our term sheets, proposal letters, credit, loan agreements. They are able to absolutely come to us with any questions or issues. And I mean, we're full disclosure with them. So that's number one. So we just investor money does not come in, and we just spend it wildly without 9-point knowing what we're doing. So that's a discipline since day one. Number two is we do these mark to markets. So we've done them now for well over a year. I think the discipline is terrific. And again, it validates our returns, which I'm not sure mark to markets were done in the other, the most recent one. I mean, we also just finished our year-end audit through. Oh, and I should mention, these monthly mark-to-markets are done by one accounting firm, and they also share those with our auditing firm, KPMG, monthly. So we really have two accounting firms about looking at those mark-to-markets and questioning them. And then I think it comes down also to, people. We've got extremely strong people, the strongest ABL team, I would say, in the country, just based on how old we are, I suppose. But I think that's the strength that our fund has, is we stick to our box. Our box is very clear, what we do, what we won't do. We don't deviate from it. And quite often funds that run into problems do. They deviate. I would say that's kind of the pluses and negatives for the fund. I think it's a wonderful opportunity, because notwithstanding the black cloud that has been put over private debt, the remaining private debt funds in Canada today in this space have those disciplines and the protocols I just described, and have did not gate during COVID, and have enjoyed really good returns with third party oversight. And so I think the funds today in Canada, including ours, it's a wonderful opportunity. We know that, a lot of companies have gotten through COVID with a great deal of support from the wonderful programs our government has provided to them, but those programs aren't going to last forever. And when those programs are no longer there to support businesses, there will be quite a number of borrowers that just can no longer stay with the Canadian banks. And those borrowers that are well collateralized and have good management teams are the ones we like to deal with. So I really feel that 2021, particularly the last half, is going to show some tremendous opportunities for us.
So when you look at the landscape, what sort of capacity constraint do you see from the Canadian market? It's not, you know, nowhere near as large as the U.S., but yeah, is there a constraint that you see at some point?
Well, you know, we get asked that question quite often, and I mean, I sure wish I had a crystal ball to say what it is, but I certainly feel it's at least a $10 billion plus market in Canada. And when I look at the United States, where, you know, asset-based lending, the way we do private debt, is now dominated by private debt funds. They just own that market. And in the States, well over 50% of middle market companies borrow by this type of lending. I mean, in Canada, I can't even guess what the percentage is, but it is pretty small. And we generally tend to lag behind the U.S. in financial products, but eventually we get there. I feel there's a tremendous upside of the asset-based lending product through the private debt funds to Canadian companies.
Okay. I think you pretty well covered everything that I wanted to ask you. I'll give you the final word. If you have any thoughts or anything that we didn't cover, that we didn't touch on, that you'd like to pass along to our investors.
Well, I just like to say, I certainly understand the top of mind thing these days is questions about private debt funds. And, you know, certainly what's in the media today will draw a lot of attention to us and with a lot of questions. And I do expect, as a result, we'll be even heavily more scrutinized by the OSC and the OSC and the regulatory bodies. And listen, we're fine with that. Full disclosure is what we've always been. And I think that my anticipated increase in this degree of oversight will be good for our industry because we definitely need it, because it just strengthens us and gives stronger assurances to our borrowers. And at the same time, I am happy at any time to answer any question that anybody might have about our fund and what we're doing or any other thing they like to ask.
I'm sorry, I guess I was remiss. And there's one question that I should have asked and I didn't. What do you think the outlook is for the rate of return going forward, say this year and maybe into next year?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't really see any rate compression this year. I think we're going to hold pretty well. There are a couple new players that have entered the market recently. And, you know, the way they're trying to build market share is by obviously reducing rates. That's the standard protocol. And so I do think that we will see on some transactions a lower ask for the rates. But we've had three signbacks in the last month. And we've either held our rate or increased our rate. So I think for the time, I think 2021, nothing material in terms of the returns.
Okay, great, great. Well, Wayne, I want to thank you for your time again. And as always, I look forward to the next time we speak and wish you and your family well over this remaining period of difficulty that we have with COVID. And I hope your business continues to flourish. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.